Welcome to Your Infinite Health. Are you getting older?
Are you feeling it?
How would you like to do that in reverse?
We're your host,
Dr. Tripp
and Lene.
We've run an integrative medicine practice for 13 years.
Together, we have 60 years of combined experience helping clients.
We've helped tens of thousands achieve success in health and live longer, happier lives.
In this show, we'll cover peer-reviewed and evidence-based integrative approaches to creating the health you've always wanted.
We also share professional experience we see in the field every day.
So if you're ready to feel, look, and live your best life, you're in the right place.
Welcome to Your Infinite Health Podcast.
Hey guys, Lene here. Tripp will be here shortly. I think he's primping or something. I got tired of waiting on him, which is usual and customary for me, but we have a great guest on, and I thought I'd just go ahead and introduce you to our guest. This is definitely an episode that you want to tune into. So I'm excited to introduce you to Leslie Kenny. And let me tell you a little bit about Leslie. Leslie's life changed dramatically in her 30s when she was diagnosed with an array of incurable autoimmune conditions, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and hypothyroidism. And if that's not bad enough, her doctor told her she only had 5 years to live. Instead of accepting her poor prognosis, though, she set out on a quest to revive her own health by bringing her body back into balance. Leslie removed all inflammatory triggers and gave her body the right tools to heal itself. While she's now 59, she has the biological age of a 21-year-old and has also successfully put her autoimmune disease into remission. With this newfound perspective on health, Leslie became a certified bulletproof health coach and began helping University of Oxford scientists raise money for groundbreaking health discoveries. It was at a meeting with one of those scientists that she learned of a powerful longevity compound called spermidine. The science was compelling. Scientists were calling it an anti-age vitamin. It was safe. However, because it was natural and food-derived and not a drug that would bring in more money, no one was interested in promoting it. With the support of her board of scientific and clinical advisors, she launched Oxford HealthSpan with its flagship product, the plant-derived spermidine supplement, now known as Primadine. So join us in welcoming Leslie. All right, Leslie, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for the kind invitation.
Are you calling from the UK? Is that where you are?
I am. I'm in Oxford, England, where the university is, about an hour west of London.
Nice. But you're not British, right?
No. I'm originally from Southern California, from Orange County.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Yeah, but I left the United States when I was about 20, 21, 22, and I'll be 59 in June. So it's been a long time.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Cool. So you're just completely integrated over there. You're almost British.
Well, I have two children who always, they call me mom.
Oh, nice.
And so my children call me mom and they say they don't understand me always unless I speak a certain way. So they've trained me.
That's
awesome.
They've
trained me to sound British enough. Yeah.
That's great. Well, so tell me, let's go back to, I'd like to hear your origin story and learn how you came to be the woman you are today and interested in longevity specifically. What did that look like for you? How did you get here?
Well, it really began when I was 39, so almost 20 years ago now, and I noticed some pain in my hands, wrist. I couldn't turn doorknobs or faucets as easily. Had some pain when typing, and I thought, this feels like what I imagine arthritis would be, but I'm obviously too young to have arthritis, so it's not that, but it's something like that. So let's go to the doctor and have this checked out. And when I heard back after taking various tests from the doctor's office, I didn't hear from the nurse, but I heard from my physician personally, which I thought was odd. And she said, instead of giving me my results, she said, could you come into my office for an appointment to have a discussion? I thought, oh, that's not good. So I went in and she told me that I was indeed correct, that it was arthritis. It was rheumatoid arthritis. And so good. There were drugs that she could give to me to suppress my immune system. I had to inject them. And they would just arrive in the mail. They just arrive, you know, delivered to me, and I kept them in the fridge. And then she said, you've also got something else called lupus. And that I'd never heard of. And I didn't know what that was. I had taken Latin in high school. So I was thinking something to do with a wolf, I guess. And she said, I said, okay, so what am I supposed to take for that? And she said, well, I'm afraid that there's nothing that we can give you for that. And this is a condition that, unlike RA, we're not going to be able to manage. It will just get progressively worse. And I said, but wait, I am in the middle of infertility treatments right now. I am on my fifth IVF. And not only is it my fifth IVF, I've got donor eggs lined up. This is a really important, expensive cycle. You know, basically, once you hit five times, most people give up. And I didn't want to do that, especially if you're a 39-year-old woman. And she just looked at me, shook her head, and said, I wouldn't do the IVF. There's no point. You have a good 5 years left. And I thought, really? I mean, I was a bit stunned. And I think that that's a conversation stopper. If you're a patient, you're not prepared, you don't know what this diagnosis, what it is, what the symptoms were, how is it different from the RA? So I really didn't know, but I did say to her, could it be a false positive? Can I do this again? And she said, it's your insurance. Sure. You know? So I was like, okay, coming back in 6 months. Wow. And I thought, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to learn everything about this. And I'm going to do my darndest. I'm going to throw the kitchen sink at this. I will leave no stone unturned. And I did. I went off. I learned everything about it. I saw that RA and lupus had inflammation as a root cause. I thought, well, if I can meet my doctor halfway by just getting rid of anything that's inflammatory in my diet or lifestyle, this might help. So I had quit a job that I'd been running a small startup at the time. It was an online matchmaking company of all things.
Okay.
So I wound that up and sold it off to a company in Japan. I got rid of dairy and gluten in my diet, got rid of sugar, and which was actually incredibly hard to do.
Sure.
Optimized sleep, took a lot of anti-inflammatory foods, extra virgin olive oil, lots of fish, oily fish, omega-3s, taking a lot of that, making my own almond milk, making sure the almonds weren't rancid, you know, only getting them from the refrigerated section, did all these things. And at the same time, I discovered in the research, which wasn't so easy to do then, a novel treatment called intravenous immunoglobulin. And I looked at that and I saw that they were actually reversing lupus and RA in small cohorts of patients. And I thought, hey, I should give this a shot. This looks fine. But when I talked to immunologists in both Britain and the United States, they cautioned me against it because it's basically pooled plasma from lots of donors. At the time, people were thinking about mad cow disease, and there might be prions, these types of proteins that were hard to look for. Could that possibly be there? Or hepatitis C, you know, people who got blood transfusions in the 70s didn't realize that there was hep C in there. So I was told not to do it, but I basically thought, if I don't do something, this doctor is telling me I have 5 years, so I may as well do it. So I did two rounds of it. Now they reached $12,000, and I did a lot of other things as well. Trauma work, meditation, hiking, all of these other pillars. I know you guys have four pillars, so mm-hmm. I was looking at, you know, many other tiny pillars in addition to your four pillars, just anything. And the result was that when I went back and retested, I went in to see my doctor. She opened the file. She said, well, look at that. You don't have lupus anymore.
Wow. And that's 6 months?
Within 6 months.
And but she didn't advise you on any of the nutritional modifications. You came up with that on your own.
Yeah, I saw a book. So in early 2005, a book came out by a fellow named Dr. Barry Sears called The Zone Anti-Inflammation or Zone Anti-Inflammatory Diet. And I looked at that book. I thought, this makes sense. I'm just going to follow this protocol. And I thought if I remove the inflammatory triggers and at the same time I reset the immune system, then maybe the overactive immune system that I have will just go back into balance. That was my whole idea, was this, I just need to go back to balance. Whereas the drugs they were giving me were there to suppress my immune system. And they did say, you know, just avoid groups of small children because they carry a lot of germs. If you're trying to become a mother, this is like, what are you talking about? I'm trying
to
spend lots of time with small children and avoid large gatherings because you might get sick. And I just thought, that's not really the quality of life that I want. Doesn't it make more sense philosophically to bring the immune system into balance as opposed to suppressing it, right? And so that was that experience, having the doctor say, you've got 5 years left. And then within 6 months say, no, you don't have this thing after all.
Oops.
Oops. Yeah, really oops. And so then, of course, as a patient, I said, would you like to know what I did? And she said, because of course, doctors are under pressure. You got to get a certain number of patients through. She said, no, that's okay.
Wow.
But I'm not the only one. There are a lot of patients who've had this. I mean, you guys are on the forefront, right?
You see
you're
that.
You have a different philosophy from other doctors, but you're the pioneers, right?
Yeah. But, you know, still, I mean, just common courtesy, professionalism,
Southerners too.
All right.
Professional curiosity would dictate, wouldn't you? You'd think that, oh, yeah. I mean, from lupus to no lupus. And I imagine you probably had a significant impact also on the RA, if not.
They both went.
All of it goes. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I see that. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And I see patients not unlike that come in because they don't want all the biologics or immunosuppressive biologics like you had the same choice. And they come in and say, I want to avoid those things because they cause lymphoma, they cause solid tumors and things like that. So is there anything else? And it will shut down the entire, it will reorganize the immune system so it's effective and not disaffected, I guess.
yeah, exactly. Well, you guys get it. And I'm so pleased to see doctors like you doing this kind of work because you have such a role to play, but you are collaborators with your patients.
Right.
And unfortunately, the old way of doing things, I guess, of training doctors is diagnose and prescribe, right?
Or cut. And, diagnose, yeah. Prescribe, or cut.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no room, you know, someone said the greatest asset in the, you know, the patient illness equation is the patient. That's the greatest asset and it's being unleveraged, right? And not every patient is motivated, but a lot of us are really motivated. We don't want to take these drugs. If you're a young woman or a woman of reproductive age and you go on these immune suppressants, you end up with methotrexate, which I know you're an oncologist, Dr. Tripp. And so methotrexate is a chemo drug. This is going to fry your eggs, right? I've met so many women who've said, oh, how did you do it? I really still want to have kids. And then I find out they've been on methotrexate. And I just think, I don't know. Did you take them out ahead of time? Do you have some embryos or some eggs? I mean, it's heartbreaking.
Well, you know, I have to add this in. I don't want to take away, I'll make this very short, but in the course of doing the integrative approach and this optimization approach that we do, I can't tell you, I'm probably, 12 for 12, Renee, with fertility women that come in have been unsuccessful with their fertility optimization of their, you know, the of those four pillars. And oops, all of a sudden, 3 months later, or even sooner sometimes, they're pregnant.
Yeah.
And they, and it's, and everything works well. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I did have that. I did end up having a similar story. And because one of the things that they didn't discover was that I had actually already, my immune system had already destroyed about 7/8 of my thyroid. So that they, I guess they'd not checked for the thyroid antibodies and they probably weren't looking for it. But once I got my thyroid hormones back in line with desiccated pig's thyroid, the doctor said, you know, if you don't want to get pregnant, by this time I had adopted my first child. If you don't want to chase after more children, because I know you're so tired. Yeah, I was hugely hypothyroid, really low cortisol. He said, you better take precaution. I just thought, oh, that's a joke. Within 3 weeks, pregnant. And yeah. Was really quite something. He was so predictive. But he said, you know, once you take these thyroid hormones again, your hormones are going to be back in balance. So again, that word balance comes up. And that has always stayed in my mind. So after I raised my kids, I ended up here in Oxford. It's a university town. And you come in contact with the other children's parents, and they tend to be scientists or you know, researchers here at the University of Oxford. And I'd ask them what they were doing while waiting for the kids to come out. And they'd tell me the most amazing things they were working on, some in regenerative medicine, which I know is a passion of yours and is a passion of mine. I'd say, wow, that's so amazing. How can I, you know, how can I or some of my friends get access to that? And they'd say, oh, no. I'm just researching. I'm just publishing. Now, this is not for commercial use. And I said, gee, don't you think you should start a company? And they'd say, oh, no, that'll distract me from my work. And because it is publish or perish, right?
Yeah, and, commissions.
Yeah. And so I just said, hey, I am not afraid to ask for money. I'm not afraid to write a business plan. Can I help you at all? And that's how I got into the Oxford sort of regenerative medicine ecosystem. Literally just by talking to people and having a real enthusiasm and passion for this particular part of scientific research. As we tend, Oxford tends to have a lot of pharma, you know, pharmaceutical research, and that's a very well-trodden path to market and exit. But when it comes to regenerative medicine, it's not as simple. It's not as easy to raise money for that. But I was very interested as a patient. I could see, just as you do, that if we can just rejuvenate the body a little bit, it knows what to do, right?
Right.
And so it was during this time that I was then introduced to a wonderful immunologist named Katja Simon, so professor of immunology, and her postdoc, Dr. Gada Al-Saleh, who trained first as a pharmacist, secondarily as a rheumatologist. And they had done some work on a really awkwardly named molecule called spermidine. Yes, it is.
That is awkwardly called.
Yes, it is indeed called that because the fellow named Antony van Leeuwenhoek in the 17th century is known as the father of modern biology. He put some semen under his microscope that he had invented, and he noticed some crystals and he couldn't identify them. They were different from the sperm moving around, and he called them spermine. And fast forward a few hundred years later, some other crystals were discovered, and those were called spermidine. Now, as a class, spermine, spermidine are known as polyamines. That just means they're made out of amino acids, and everybody's familiar with amino acids if you take collagen, right? And so it's nothing to be afraid of. Everybody makes spermidine and spermine. Everyone. Your dog, your grandmother, all of us. So it's not like this is a male-only thing.
Okay.
And it is so crucial for the survival of the next generation, both humans and in animals and plants, that it is in high quantities in the endosperm of a seed. And it is also in high quantities in breast milk. And it is needed for cellular turnover, but also it activates a fascinating cellular renewal process called autophagy or autophagy. You can say it either way. It's like tomato or tomato. And this was the subject of the 2016 Nobel Prize in Medicine or Physiology, which was won by Professor Yoshinori Osumi of Tokyo Tech. And he discovered the 18 genes necessary for this process to unfold in the body. Well, basically, when this works, it's like oven cleaning for your cells, right? So okay. You don't have to do it. It's great. It's oven cleaning for your cells. And so if you think about heart cells, like our hair, skin, and nails replace all the time, but your heart cells don't actually replace so often. When you're, say, 25, 26, about 1% of your cardiomyocytes will replace themselves every year. Not a lot. By, you know, my age, closer to 60, it's like 0.5%. So those heart cells are like vintage cars. They start out young, and then we just got to keep maintaining them. So that autophagic process, that cellular renewal process, is really important to kind of keep them optimal, because we're never going to get a lot of them. So it's important for those cells, but it's also important in the brain for cognition, getting rid of waste. It will help get rid of things like dysfunctional mitochondria, dysfunctional stem cells, dysfunctional or misfolded proteins
in fatter cells.
Does it it gets rid of zombie cells?
So those would be senescent cells. So what we can show is that we don't know definitively across all different organs, the cells in different parts of the body. We know with immune cells, yes, it can. So cellular senescence is one of those 12 hallmarks of aging. And just like impaired mitochondria, impaired stem cells, misfolded proteins, telomere attrition, things like that. And so while we know that spermidine inhibits 9 of the 12 hallmarks of aging, senescence is one where we can only say definitively it works with immune cells, but we don't know with other cells. We haven't proven that yet. And you always want to make sure that, you know, you've got the evidence. And I know you're all about the evidence-backed intervention. So, but the immune system is very important. And obviously, as an oncologist, Dr. Tripp can appreciate this, because one of the things that the immune system does when it's working properly is it is able to identify cancerous cells and dispose of them properly. And this is why, as you both know, you see cancer more frequently in the older population, right? Because the immune system is failing. And in the same way that the immune system fails with proper identification of self from non-self, proper identification of pathogens and viruses, ability to fight things like, you know, the virus that shall not be named, or pneumonia. So the immune system is very important to maintaining health in the body for all those reasons. So getting rid of senescent cells there and or rejuvenating them is quite important.
So the spermidine is a supplement that is available to...
Well, you can get it in your food. And I always tell people, get it first and foremost in your food if you can, because all of the healthy centenarians in those longevity zones around the world, the blue zones like Okinawa or Ikaria, Sardinia, Nicoya Peninsula, all of these people have diets with high concentrations of spermidine. So things like legumes, lentils, beans, mushrooms, peas, all of those things are very good sources of spermidine, but also the other polyamines that come together that are also helpful. You can get it in wheat germ. In Japan, they have a delicacy called natto, which is a fermented soy dish. And that is the food with the highest concentration of spermidine anywhere. But it's a bit like Stilton cheese, which is very favored here in the UK at Christmas. You know, it's not to everybody's liking. It's got a very strong smell, unusual mouthfeel, just not for everybody. So if that's not for you, do try it from those other sources. Leafy greens, also a decent source. And then for individuals who, say, have had a virus recently, you will be depleting your body's store cupboards of spermidine because it can activate something called virophagy. So it's like autophagy, but it's for viruses. And you can actually, spermidine will help sequester those viruses and then dispose of them. So in that case, one of the reasons why a lot of people lost hair after COVID was that they had depleted the stores of spermidine, and spermidine is what keeps hair in the anagen or growth phase of the hair life cycle. And that's also the only time when pigment is produced, when melanogenesis happens. And so once people put this back into their diet again, they notice they get better hair quality, better color. And we have a supplement, Oxford Healthspan, the company that I founded, has a supplement called Primadine to put you back in your new prime of life.
Nice.
And
it's like a much better name for marketing purposes.
Yeah. I always knew that, but the instant I heard the name of this, I said to Lachlan McKinnon, who was the fellow here at Oxford, who introduced me to this, I said, oh my God, that's the worst name I have ever heard. That is a marketer's nightmare. We will have to call it something else because my mother will never be able to go into a store to ask for that.
Yeah. It's like asking for a condom at the gas station.
Yeah. 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 It was just never, never, ever going to work. You know, back to where you can get it, yes, as a supplement. So for those people who have really depleted their store cupboards, as I like to call it, of spermidine, then taking a supplement is really helpful to kind of give you a big boost of this, you know, food-derived polyamine that has such a big effect on cell turnover, but also cell renewal, rejuvenation, and also recycling of cellular material as well.
Is there a test? Is there a lab where somebody can see what their values are?
No, that's what's really sad. I think a lot of people would love that. I would love that. At the moment, they're using electron microscopy to, you know, determine these values, and you really need to be at an academic institution to, you know, get this done. But it's not easy to see. And even in mouse trials, one of the things, like, you would normally want to measure it in, say, blood plasma. But the problem is it's taken up so quickly by the organs. And especially the older that we get, it will go preferentially to places like cardiomyocytes, to the brain, to bone, for instance. And so it's not something that, you know, is easy to measure in blood at all.
Does it intuitively go where it's needed most?
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah, because the body prioritizes. Yeah, exactly like exosomes. Yeah. But this is the amazing thing about the body. We always underestimate it and think that we're so clever. We can tell the body where this should go. Actually, once you give these things, whether it's exosomes or spermidine, and put it back in the body says, this is great. I know what to do with this, right? And it knows how to triage and allocate, right? So it will allocate first and foremost to things that are crucial to our survival, the survival of the organism, secondarily to things like hair, skin, and nails, right? And that's why as we get older, we tend to have thinning hair. We tend to notice that, you know, trying to open a can with our nails, that hurts. You know, our skin isn't quite as it was because the body is going to not put it there for that purpose. It's going to use it preferentially in these other crucial places. And interestingly, when mothers are breastfeeding their babies, the body makes the choice to give spermidine to the baby first. And that's why mothers are losing. That's one of the two reasons why mothers tend to lose hair after breastfeeding. The other would be some depleted thyroid. Interesting that the body makes that call. Next generation, more important than the survival of this organism or the hair of the mother. Forget that now.
Well, and the question about levels also, it always begs the question, what I've seen, you know, subject to oncology and to thyroids, a prime example. We look at these levels, but then that level has to go through maybe 100 different reactions before it effectuates a change. And that change is then manifest by subsequently by changes in sense of well-being and health and all those things.
Yeah.
Metabolism, repair mechanisms, all these things are determined by how the body processes it. And that's why it's so important to have a surrogate, not just a, you know, a level in the blood to know what's going on and how the body is responding to that administration.
So I think that there are two sort of proxies or surrogates that we could use for this. And I'd say that our clients, so we have a food-derived spermidine. There are a lot of synthetic spermidines out there. It's quite cheap to buy from China, literally pennies to create a single bottle. And those don't have these other cofactors that come in food, which we've put into our supplement. But our clients tell us that for price reasons, they try the synthetic, nothing happens. They try ours, and they notice the changes to hair, skin, and nails. These are very fast cellular turnover areas, as is the lining of the gut, because that is renewing itself about every 72 hours. And people tell us that their gut problems go away, which is very interesting. So that's one possible way to look at it. You know, do you see a difference? But the other would be with these biological age tests. There are these DNA methylation tests like True Diagnostics out of Kentucky, or Glycan Age, which is out of London. And that is measuring glycation and or inflammation. So I've done the Glycan Age test, and the actress Halle Berry, who was in Q-Play Catwoman, she also took the Glycan Age test. She's a year younger than I am. She has type 1 diabetes, and her biological age was 40. My biological age, according to them, is 21.
Wow.
Makes almost no sense to me at all. But if we simply think of it as less a specific age, but more a needle on a gauge, you know, younger, older, mm-hmm. and it's more on the young side, I'll take that. So spermidine is definitely, it's very effective against reactive oxygen species. And that probably also helps with, you know, with the gray hair, because although I'll be 59 in, you know, 2 months, I don't have to dye my hair.
Nice.
So which is honestly great, because I'm a terribly lazy person. I would much rather spend my time reading some scientific paper like this one, as opposed to, you know, to doing anything else.
2 hours at the hair salon.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine.
Imagine that wouldn't create a lot of conversation in a beauty parlor anyway. Those articles.
Yeah, no, that would be terrible. The toxicity of hair dye, that would be pretty bad. Yeah.
Anyway. Well, okay, so that's fascinating. I'm going to have to get me... So that test, you said it's in the UK. Is it available in the US?
It's available in the US, yes.
Yeah. What was the name of it again?
Glycan Age, GlycanAge.
I have to check that out.
There are a number of these biological clock tests that are out there. I mean, even related to telomeres, related to the acetylation, methylation, all of them are, a number of them out there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we use True Age in our practice. I'd be curious to have somebody take both and see what the average is.
Yeah, I think that I don't know if these are perfectly perfected, because True Age is the True Diagnostic product, right?
Right.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly. Those guys are great. And I know that they have tweaked their test over the years. They used to have an immune age, and they took that out. I like the Dunedin PACE age test, and that's certainly one that I know Harvard, Stanford, Yale, they're using that, and they're using a full vial of blood for that to get a really good result. I always tell people, just again, think of it as opposed to saying this is really your age, just think of it as a gauge. You know, you're on the lower side, you're on the higher side. Don't get too caught up in the specific age itself.
All right. Tell me about the summit. Do you lead that? What does that tell me about that?
Yeah. So this is actually really exciting. So as you can tell, I love this stuff, and I really want to empower other patients to collaborate with great doctors like you. And the first step to empowerment is knowledge, just like your podcast, getting the knowledge out there. And one of the things that I realized was that it was taking about 17 years, between 10 and 17 years, to get breakthrough bench science from the scientist to the practitioner, who could then incorporate it as a protocol and get it out to a patient. And like IVIG, like intravenous immunoglobulin with me, I still meet doctors today who have no idea what this is, or, oh, I heard it once. I heard about it at medical school and they've never used it, which I think is a tragedy. So what we really wanted to do, my fellow colleague, Sir Christopher Ball, Professor Dennis Noble, who's a cardiovascular physiologist, and Dr. Paul Chen, we got together during COVID and said, we've just got to get this information out there. What is the best way to do it? And of course, nobody could meet. So we thought, we'll just start putting webinars out there and create a symposia. So once we were able to meet again, we started holding these summits. And the first one was at Keble College, Oxford University last year. This next one will be at St. Hilda's. And we have some great academics and practitioners. So Sir Muir Gray, who is Glaswegian, Glasgow, been with the NHS since the 70s. And he is the one who actually created the evidence-based medicine master's program here at the University of Oxford. But he works with the National Health Service here in the UK to really look at evidence-based practices, as well as evidence-based practices that patients can actually use. Because again, the patient is the part of the equation that modern medicine doesn't use. It's so underutilized. So how do we get them involved in this? So he'll be speaking, Professor Robin Chowdhury, who is the university's leading cardiologist. He's unusual in that he's a cardiac surgeon, but he's also a principal investigator. So he publishes. He'll be speaking together with Professor Dennis Noble, who is, as I mentioned, a cardiovascular physiologist, who discovered the effect of adrenaline on the heart and did the first computational models of the rhythm of the heart, upon which the pacemaker models, modern models, have all been based. Nicolina Lauck, who is the CEO of GlycanAge, she'll be speaking. So she'll be talking about biological aging. Dr. Sandra Kaufman from Miami, actor George Hamilton's longevity doctor, she'll be speaking. She's written two books on anti-aging. We've also got a Harvard and Oxford trained neurology oncologist. So he's a neurosurgeon with a specialty in tumors, and he'll be speaking as well about how the hallmarks of cancer and the hallmarks of aging dovetail. I think this is right up your alley, Dr. Tripp.
Yep.
And Professor Sovan Sarkar from the University of Birmingham will also be speaking. I'm worried. Oh, yes. And of course, Dr. Gada Al-Saleh, who was one of the people who did the original research on spermidine, but who's now the head of the UK's only space innovation lab. And she, yes, because we age faster in space, you know, all these people who say, oh, we can just trash the planet. We'll live on
Mars. We'll go to Mars.
We'll live under the sea. Interestingly, well, submariners and astronauts both age extraordinarily fast. And so
I thought the opposite was true for some. What movie made me think that you age slower in space?
Probably something
Interstellar.
With George Clooney, because he looks
Interstellar,
so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I want to be like George. So she'll be speaking, and she's sending organoids into space and looking at how they age and then what we can use to halt that aging process. Because, of course, if it works in space, then maybe it will work even better here on land. That's on the 29th of June, Saturday, the 29th of June.
Where is that?
It's at St. Hilda's College, University of Oxford. And we have some rooms set aside at St. Hilda's. Because it's very hard then to get a room in Oxford. Everybody's graduating. So everybody's walking around town in these long gowns, you know, their academic garb.
So it looks like Harry Potter over there.
It looks just like Harry Potter then. And all the hotel rooms are booked because, you know, the parents are flying in from all over the world for these. But,
will
you be set aside.
Streaming that event?
We will be live streaming. Yes. And we will also be doing, revealing the results of a survey on attitudes to aging at that time.
And
so that will be quite, I think that'll be quite good as well.
Be quite telling.
Yeah.
Attitudes to aging. Who's the study group?
Well, it's 25 countries around the world. And it is all cohorts. So from Gen Z all the way through boomers and above, boomers and the silent generation. So it should be very interesting because obviously for boomers, the idea that they're going to live an extra 20 years is a bit of a wake-up call. They might not have expected that. What? I can't keep drinking and smoking? Now I'll have to go see Dr. Tripp and Lynette, right?
Or you mean I have to keep working?
Well, there's that. Yeah, there's that component too. And then, yeah, but you do need to invest in your health. And in the end, the return on investment is so much greater, right? If you can invest in your health and all these other costs
right.
that might happen or your lack of mobility, need for a care home, that all just falls to the side.
That's right.
The other thing though is Gen Z, because they're so young. And they're looking quite far ahead. So will they lead their lives the way that we have? Will they actually front load with education, have this middle bulge for professional life and career, and then the third for retirement, or will they do something different?
Yeah, I mean, based on my kids, they're going to be doing something different.
Yeah, I think they will. And there is some existing research from London Business School and a fellow named Professor Andrew Scott on this, where half of his MBA class will opt to do the traditional route and the other half opts to do a little bit of everything. But interestingly, that group, that cohort said they wanted three different life partners. They wanted one to have fun with while they're young. Then they wanted one to like settle down with and have kids with and raise them, very responsible. And then after that, they wanted another one to have fun with again. And they were taking career breaks and they were doing lifelong education.
Like that. I like that idea.
Or you have one person that's fun and responsible and fun. Right.
I mean, that's what I was about to say. I think
that would save money and you know, mitigate some legality costs.
Emotional stress.
Yeah. Yeah. Emotional stress. That's right.
That's hilarious.
Absolutely.
Fascinating stuff. Well, tell me, what is one thing that you would like the listener to know?
Your body is more powerful than you know. Do not ignore it. Basically that.
Awesome. And then where can everybody find more information about you, more information about Primadyne,
yep.
and more information about the summit if they wanted to participate?
So let's start with the summit first. That would be at oxfordlongevityproject.org. And we've got a lot of free webinars there already. And then for Primadyne, you'd go to oxfordhealthspan.com. So Oxford Health and then span, like the span of a bridge.com. And then for me, if you want to see anything with me, and I actually have kind of a fun little YouTube channel about reversing gray hair called Leslie's New Prime. And that's on YouTube. So that's where you can find me and the product and the Longevity Project.
Great. All right. Listener, don't worry. I'll have those links written somewhere. So they'll be available to you. Leslie, thank you so much. I learned a lot.
Great stuff.
Exciting. Exciting.
Well, it was great talking to you. I hope I have the pleasure of meeting you sometime. And please do consider coming to the summit. And if not, I hope I get down to New Orleans sometime. And
let me know when you're coming.
For sure. Yeah. Let us know. Absolutely.
Excellent. All right.
All right, listener. So I hope you found this educational, informational, somewhat entertaining, and until next time.
Thanks for subscribing to Your Infinite Health. I'm Dr. Tripp.
And I'm Lynnae. Until next time, feel it, look it, and live it.